we'll have a calendar or at least a process aiming towards a calendar established at COP30. But as Brazilian diplomats have been saying here very clearly, before COP30, we have to sort out COP29. And COP29 right now is not going to a nice place.
Agriculture is an important sector in Brazil, with agribusiness making up something like half the country's exports. The sector also accounts for a quarter of Brazil's greenhouse gas emissions each year. How will this be addressed? And then talk about where we're headed next year, COP30, what it means to be in the Amazon rainforest.
Right. Well, if you look at Brazil's emissions curve, the agribusiness activities, if you account for deforestation, it's actually 75% of our emissions every year, because 46% of Brazilian emissions are just deforestation, most of it in the Amazon and in the Cerrado, the central Brazilian savanna. So agriculture is tremendously important for Brazil. I wouldn't expect COP30 to be a COP about agriculture or about forests. It's going to be a climate conference in the Amazon, not necessarily about the Amazon. Of course, Brazil has its own ideas about how to handle money for forest conservation and for reducing deforestation. It's actually doing a good job on tackling deforestation right now in the Lula administration. But COP30 should really be about the elephant in the room, and that's fossil fuels.
Well, we're going to continue to cover this on Monday, even when we're not here. Not clear if it will be over by the time of our broadcast then. But I wanted to ask you one more question about Brazil's federal police force recommending criminal charges against the far-right former president, as a Jair Bolsonaro, for attempting a coup as he tried to cling to power in the wake of the 2022 presidential election. The recommended charges against Bolsonaro, along with 36 former aides and cabinet members, came as CNN Brazil reported Bolsonaro had full knowledge of a plot to assassinate then-president-elect Lula. Five people, including a former advisor to Bolsonaro, were arrested over the alleged conspiracy this week. This is what President Lula said about the plot for the first time.
I can assure you that I am a man who has much more to be thankful for because I am alive. The attempt to poison me and Vice President Ackman did not work, and we are still here.
As we wrap up, Claudio, the significance of this, of the former president, the allegations that he was involved with the coup and had knowledge of the attempted assassination.
Well, the indiction of Bolsonaro and some of his former aides is, of course, very serious. But I'll spare my celebration for when he's in jail.
Well, we're going to leave it there, but continue, of course, to cover all of these issues. Claudio Angelo is head of international policy at Brazil's Climate Observatory. He's based in Brasilia, usually. Mohamed Adel is director of PowerShift Africa, based in Nairobi, Kenya. But we're all here in Baku, Azerbaijan, for COP29, the UN Climate Summit that's being held here. When we come back, we speak to the leading Palestinian human rights attorney, Raji Sarani, about the International Criminal Court's historic decision to issue arrest warrants for the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and the former defense minister, Yoav Gallant. Back in 20 seconds.
My people of the world, come let us stand in solidarity. Yeah. As the world is in crisis, from the loss and the damage the whole world is going through. Wealthy nations are failing to act, they cannot fulfill a promise. As the years go by, people and they die, it's a call for one action. Our world is crushing, our world is dying. Yeah. Tell me who is gonna save us from the loss and the damage. Our people are dying. Yeah. Tell me who is gonna save us from the loss and the damage. Yeah. Tell me who is gonna save our world.
many hurdles. Foreign issues we are facing the struggle. Industrialization from the rich nations is the cause of our trouble.
Tell us who, by Climate Action Network International. Those are protesters here, climate justice activists, leaders in the climate community, dancing. They're not allowed to make a lot of noise at the climate summit. Yes, we're in Baku, Azerbaijan, for the UN Climate Summit COP29. I'm Amy Goodman. But we're turning now to the International Criminal Court's historic decision to indict Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, as well as Hamas commander Mohammed Deif. In a statement, the ICC said the Israeli leaders had intentionally and knowingly deprived the civilian population in Gaza of objects indispensable to their survival, including food, water, and medicine and medical supplies, as well as fuel and electricity, unquote. On Thursday, Netanyahu slammed the International Criminal Court for making what he called an anti-Semitic decision, unquote. The Biden administration also criticized the ICC. This is White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre.
We fundamentally reject the court's decision to issue arrest warrants for senior Israel officials. We remain deeply concerned by the prosecutor's rush to seek arrest warrants and the troubling process errors that led to this decision. The United States has been clear that the ICC does not have jurisdiction over this matter.
But other nations, including Italy, the Netherlands, and Canada, have vowed to comply with the ICC arrest warrants. On Thursday, Nermeen Sheikh and I spoke to Raji Sarani, the founder and director of the Palestinian Center for Human Rights in Gaza. The award-winning human rights lawyer fled Gaza after Israel bombed his home. He is the winner of the Right Livelihood Award, as well as the Robert F. Kennedy International Human Rights Prize. He spoke to us from Cairo, Egypt. I asked him to respond to the International Criminal Court ruling.
This is a great day for justice and dignity of man. It's a great day for the rule of law. And this day makes us remember all these souls of children, women, civilians, all the destruction, all the starvation and displacements. Mm-hmm. Gaza suffered for the last 13 months in this ongoing genocide, which broadcasted live on air at the real time to the whole world. And it costed us so far. 44,000 has been killed. More than 70% of them are civilians. And not only that, but 140,000 has been injured. One third of them will die because there is no access for medical equipment or medicine or even food. So it's a great day to have these genociders finally with arrest warrant and wanted for justice at the most important court on earth.
Well, Raji Sarani, could you respond to the way that the Israeli prime minister has responded to this news? The prime minister's office declared in a statement on Thursday that the ICC's anti-Semitic decision to issue arrest warrants against Netanyahu and Gallant is, quote, equivalent to a modern Dreyfus trial. Your response, Raji Sarani?
I mean, no new news in this. They are very arrogant. They are very jealous. The West, especially US and Europe, made Israel feel they will never, ever, they will be held accountable. They feel they are immune. They are doing all what they are doing at the daylight, and they don't hide it. They attack children cancer hospitals at the daylight. They attack hospitals and doctors. They rape prisoners by the army. and the army detention centers. They kill women, children at the daylight. They starve people. They criminalize UNRWA. The body which should serve the Palestinian refugees in the Gaza Strip, the only body which is doing and delivering that. And nobody holds them accountable. Look, last night, this ugly veto of the U.S. to the Security Council against ceasefire, just to stop genocide, by whom we are killed, by which bombs and missiles and airplanes. It's American. It's European. They feel they are fully immune. They are free to do whatever they can. They will never be held accountable. And why their appetite for crimes going like a snowball every day, like now they are talking publicly. We're cleaning Gaza from these 2.5 million people, and we will settle in it, and the settlers will be there. And they began to sell the land of Gaza to the settlers and to sell the apartments. And they declared their intention about West Bank and the cleaning it. This is unprecedented, that such state, Israel, having all these crimes were crimes, crimes against humanity and genocide, and just be dealt normally. This criminal, while he's doing genocide, he came to the Congress and he was received by everybody, and everybody was applauding him and his acts more than the president of the United States. So he's a criminal. He deserves accountability.
That's Raji Sarani, founder and director of the Palestinian Center for Human Rights in Gaza, where he was born. The award-winning human rights lawyer fled Gaza after Israel bombed his home last year. To see the full interview, go to democracynow.org. Raji was speaking to us from Cairo, Egypt. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. But we're looking at a bill that was passed in the House of Representatives Thursday. It was approved. It would empower the Treasury Department to revoke the tax-exempt status of any nonprofit it deems to have provided material support to a terrorist organization without any evidence needed. If the bill becomes law, it could apply to a range of nonprofits, including unions, membership organizations, foundations, and media organizations. A broad coalition of civil society groups have opposed the so-called nonprofit killer. H.R. 9495 passed the House 219 to 184, with 15 Democrats supporting the Republican majority. Earlier versions of the bill received broad bipartisan support, but following Donald Trump's election, most Democrats withdrew their support. For more, we go to East Lansing, Michigan, where we're joined by Darrell Lee. He's an anthropologist, lawyer, and legal scholar teaching at the University of Chicago. His analysis of the so-called nonprofit killer bill was published on Spencer Ackerman's blog, ForeverWars.com. It's headlined "The Most Dangerous Domestic Anti-Terrorism Bill Since the Patriot Act." Okay, Darrell, why? Why is this so significant? Again, it was passed in the House. It now makes its way to the Senate.
Thank you for having me on, Amy. As you mentioned, this bill is essentially a civil rights disaster that would allow the government under any administration. I want to be clear that this bill is terrible no matter who is president, but it would allow the government to shut down nonprofits on the smear of being terrorist supporting organizations. Now, obviously, the government, after decades of authoritarian war on terror policies, already has ample legal tools at its disposal to go after nonprofits essentially for any reason that it wishes. What this bill would do, in addition, the thing that it would add and the thing that makes it so dangerous, and actually the most dangerous domestic terrorism law in a generation, is that it would essentially smuggle in through the back door a domestic terrorist group list for the first time. This is something that the United States to this day still doesn't have. We have many, many lists of so-called foreign terrorist organizations that are overwhelmingly Muslim and or based in the global South. This law requires an accusation with no evidence, but a tie-in. It's an accusation that nonprofits are supporting a group on one of the existing international terrorism lists. This is important to understand because it explains why so many people on the right in Congress are comfortable signing on, because the bill is essentially discriminatory by design. Right-wingers and white supremacists in Congress can support this bill with the assurance that their allies, right-wing extremist groups, are highly, highly unlikely to ever be targeted by this bill, because it's much less likely that they will be smeared with an accusation of being tied to an international terrorist organization that's already on one of the government lists. So that's why this particular coalition has come together, and it will. Oh, go on.
Talk more about the origins of the bill, why Democrats supported the bill, and what it means now that it's going to the Senate, how organizations are organizing around it.
Right. So since October 7th, we've seen a whole bunch of outlandish anti-Palestinian pieces of legislation that have been designed to crush any protest or dissent around Palestine in the United States, while Congress, of course, continues to supply untold billions of dollars and weapons to Israel for ongoing genocide in Gaza. This particular piece of legislation is the one that has gotten closest to becoming law. And initially, it did have significant bipartisan support because, of course, there anti-Palestinian racism is one of the great bipartisan unifiers in Congress. With the efforts of civil society groups to ring the alarm and educate members of Congress about the dangers of this bill, not only for Palestine advocacy, but broadly for any number of causes, and of course, with the election of Donald Trump, more and more Democrats have awoken to the danger. So right now, the important thing, now that the bill has passed the House, is to ensure that it does not go anywhere in the Senate. So it's extremely important for people to keep up the pressure on the Democratic members of Congress, and especially those in the Senate, to block this bill in the remainder of this session, and of course, if it comes up in a future legislative session.
And of course, next session. Now, this already came up just a week or two ago, and now it has passed in the House. The Democrats control the Senate, but the Republicans will soon control the Senate.
That's right, they will. But my understanding is that they'll still need 60 votes to pass. So I don't think the Republicans will have 60 senators. So there is still a chance that the bill can be blocked. But again, we can't take it for granted. It requires all hands on deck and as much pressure as possible on the Senate Democrats to ensure that this bill doesn't go anywhere.
You know, Daryl, it's interesting that I'm talking to you here in Baku, Azerbaijan, because there have been scores of journalists, civil society, climate justice activists arrested in the lead up to the COP. And for those who write about what's happening in this authoritarian petro-state, they talk about the targeting of nonprofit groups. And that's the beginning of going after these people who end up in jail. A number have said they've been brutalized in jail. Your final thoughts, Daryl?
Yeah, so one thing that's important for people to understand is that the Supreme Court has already said that material support for terrorism can include speech acts. It can include so-called coordinated advocacy. So it goes far beyond funding. And this is something that I think for media organizations in particular should really be sort of raising the alarms in terms of the dangers of this bill for their work in particular.
Daryl Lee, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Anthropologist, lawyer, legal scholar, teaching at the University of Chicago. We'll link to your article, The Most Dangerous Domestic Anti-Terrorism Bill Since the Patriot Act. Coming up, we'll look at Trump's new pick for Attorney General, Pam Bondi. Back in 20 seconds. We'll be right back.
the class state of a petro king with a complicated take on things like human rights, but baby, that's the sacrifice bringing joy to the world. And Island Young, how the West was won with Christ's big heart and a bigger gun. But it wasn't enough, so we took the moon.
Old and youth. This breaking news, Britain has just said it would comply if Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu or the former defense minister Yoav Gallant came to Britain in arresting him. Yes, this is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We're broadcasting from Baku, Azerbaijan. But we end today's show looking at Donald Trump's new pick to head the Department of Justice, former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi. Trump made the announcement hours after Matt Gaetz withdrew from consideration as Attorney General amidst a firestorm over allegations of sex trafficking involving a 17-year-old girl he had sex with. Pam Bondi served as Florida's Attorney General from 2011 to 2019. She served on Trump's defense team during his first impeachment trial, now works at the Trump-aligned America First Policy Institute. As a lobbyist, her clients have included Amazon, GM, Uber, and the Nation of Qatar. The news outlet Lever reports Bondi's brother, Brad Bondi, has represented Elon Musk and Tesla against federal securities fraud charges. We're joined from Rochester, New York, by the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David K. Johnston, co-founder of D.C. Report, author of three books on Donald Trump, including The Big Cheat, How Donald Trump Fleeced America and Enriched Himself and His Family. In that book, he details how Bondi dropped a probe into Trump University in 2013 after Trump's family Foundation donated $25,000 to her campaign. David, talk about her nomination and the significance of the Trump University case.
Well, in Pam Bondi, Donald Trump has just the person he really wants. Someone who will be a lapdog when it comes to wrongdoing by those people he likes and wants to insulate and protect, and a vicious attack dog for anybody Donald Trump wants to seek revenge against. And she demonstrated her loyalty to him 11 years ago when she accepted through an arm of her campaign, affiliate of her campaign for Attorney General of Florida, a $25,000 contribution from Trump University, a nonprofit, a charity. Charities in America are not allowed to give to political campaigns. Her campaign defended that they were going to keep that money. At the same time, there were complaints going from people in Florida that they'd been ripped off by Trump University, Donald Trump's fraudulent education scheme, and she killed that investigation. So the fact that Pam Bondi is corrupt and perfectly loyal to Trump has been thoroughly established.
So talk about what has taken place. I mean, she would be the head of the Department of Justice, what exactly that means. And again, she, her nomination follows the nomination of a fellow Floridian, right, Matt Gaetz, who increasing information was coming out on about this investigative report from the House, if you want to comment on that, and then more on who Pam Bondi is, how close she is to Trump, how, I guess you could say, bonded she is to Trump, and what would it mean to be the Attorney General?
Well, Matt Gaetz, who practiced law long enough to have a cup of coffee, was a totally unfit candidate. And I believe Donald Trump put him forward as a test of loyalty and obedience by United States senators who are Republicans. He asked them to arrange what's called a recess appointment, which would have allowed Matt Gaetz to serve as Attorney General for 2 years without the advice and consent of the Senate, which is required under the American Constitution. What he was really doing was finding out, will the U.S. senators bow down to him and ignore their constitutional duties, further his efforts to become our dictator, something, you know, I have warned about for 9 years. Now, in Bondi, he has someone who represented him on the floor of the House during his first impeachment. And I think to call her fumbling and not very good would be perfectly reasonable, arguably not competent. But that doesn't matter to Donald. What matters to Donald is total loyalty. If you want to create a dictatorship in the United States, there are two things Donald has to do to fulfill his statement that he's going to be dictator, though he claims for one day. You have to control the enforcement of the laws. And there are more than 100,000 people at the Justice Department. The FBI is under the Attorney General, for example. And then secondly, you have to fire those general officers, admirals and generals, who will not do your bidding and ignore their oath of office, and replace them with craven junior officers who will do your bidding, politicizing the American military. Those are the two key levers to creating a Trump dictatorship.
And finally, can you talk about her other positions and her position as chair of the equivalent of the Heritage Foundation, the America First group that has taken many positions like hers against same-sex marriage, against the Affordable Care Act, et cetera, David K. Johnston?
Well, Pam Bondi has been a lobbyist. She properly registered, unlike some people around Trump, representing Qatar and other foreign interests, as well as some domestic companies, including, I don't remember the exact name, sorry. But she has clearly identified herself with those people who want to take away freedom from Americans. The Republican Party used to say that it stood for freedom, for individual freedom. It's very clear that it now stands for authoritarian control. And the organization that she affiliated herself with is part of that. You will behave the way we want you to do in the Trump administration, or we will find ways to punish you. We'll find ways to take away money, to shut down your nonprofit organization on a whim, a mere accusation with no proof. And remember that under the U.S. Supreme Court's immunity decision, anything Donald Trump does in his official capacity is beyond review by anyone anywhere. The Supreme Court majority has effectively set up a dictatorship for Trump. The question is, does he have the competence to execute it? No. Does he have people around him who are competent to execute it? Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us, David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, co-founder of DC Report. Author of three books on Trump, including The Big Cheat, How Donald Trump Fleeced America and Enriched Himself and His Family. I want to say thank you so much to our local crew here in Baku, Azerbaijan, Dave Pentlow, Julian Jones, David Yakalucci, Tobin Shackelford, Callum Skipworth, and Rufana Kamalova. A very happy birthday to Alexa Nemchik. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermin Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamarie Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Hannah Elias, Sonji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick. To see all of our coverage from COP29, go to democracynow.org and all the social media platforms. We're right there. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Trolling college music so you don't have to. No loyalties, no orthodoxy. Keeping it real, dumb, and organic since 2019. Tune into Home of Burnaby Rock with John on Fridays from 6 to 8 p.m.
Thank you. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Radio. It's Burnaby. Bum, 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 bum.